Blog Talk Radio. Good evening and hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon, the podcast where fascinating people meet. I'm your host, your groove mistress, and your spiritual advisor, Madame Perry, but you can call me Perry, Jennifer, JP, whatever. You don't have to call me Madame. I am so happy to be here, and thanks to everyone who's been, apparently you're sharing with this with people as well, because more people have been subscribing on Spotify and Apple and leaving nice reviews, and I really do appreciate those. That lets me know what kind of guests you enjoy to have on here, and we have a pretty good variety of guests. By the way, somebody was asking about a couple of recent guests. DC Glenn, DC the Brain Supreme from Tag Team, you probably see him every day on those Geico commercials where he says, scoop, there it is, and sprinkles. He was on a couple of weeks ago, and somebody asked me, you know, was he serious when he said, if you need help, call me? Yeah, he's serious. He even gave out his email on that show, and I know it's legit. It's the same one that he and I correspond with. So, yes, he's a very generous man, and he wants to be able to help anyone. Right now he's working on the show Games People Play on BET in Atlanta. So, yeah, he's here. He doesn't make empty promises. He's there to help you. Also, somebody was asking about Franny Goldie, and she's got some new things out. Franny Goldie is a dress designer or clothing designer. But you may have known her from her life as a Grammy-winning songwriter for people like The Commodores, Night Shift, Selena, Dreaming, Pussycat Dolls, Stick With You. She wrote hundreds of songs that you know, but she has it's Franny Goldie, FranneGoldie.com. She has what Adam Glassman of Oprah Magazine calls the magic pants. And if you go to her website, whatever you order, put in MPS, as in Madame Perry Salon, MPS, when you check out, and you'll get a discount. Also, I think the free guitar still holds with David Fishoff from Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. If you mention Madame Perry Salon when you sign up, you'll have a guitar. And somebody said, what kind of guitar? And when Lita Ford was on here, she said, who cares? He's giving you a free guitar. You know, he's that kind of guy. So, yeah, so check that out as well. And coming up next week, we have Adelia Acker she's half of co-host of the podcast, We're Our Only Fans, WOOF, and she'll be here next Tuesday, I believe. So, yeah, tonight's show is so much fun. I am so excited about this. I'm going to bring in my co-host, who some of you know because she was on the show, I think, a couple of years back. And she's also an author. She's starting to promote her new book, Address the Color of the Moon. Jennifer Irwin, welcome back here to the Genie Bottle.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer. I'm thrilled to be co-hosting with you and meeting the amazing author for your guest.
Oh my gosh, I know, Breanne Davis. I still can't believe it. So, just so people know before we go, when you were on before, it's because it was your first book, Address the Color of the Sky, and the main character Prue, and this connects with tonight's show. She's a sex addict and she goes into rehab, mm-hmm. and Address the Color of the Moon, I believe, is when Prue and I think they're called the cast of characters from the rehab, mm-hmm. re-enter the world trying to repair damaged relationships and navigate a new yep. world with new tools.
Yep, yep. And the trials and tribulations that go with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wish you
yes,
much success.
I'm very excited to share it. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And you'll have to come back on a different show and talk all about that. And, of course, most people know, for anybody wanting to book Jennifer Irwin on your show, call me. I'm her publicist, so we got to get that. We got to get it. Because everyone who reads it loves it. Everybody who knows your work loves it. And, yeah. Now, tonight's guest, as you know, and people are really psyched about this show, as I am and as you are, this is a Wonder Woman. Now, I don't know if she describes herself as that, but this lady, she's an actress, author, producer, director, she's a business owner, podcaster, and a wife and mother. I don't know how she does it, if it's, she has some special vitamins. I want to know. She's definitely smart, and she's definitely hardworking, extremely talented. You may know her from shows like, well, her early career began with Dawson's Creek. She's also done Nip Tuck, CSI Miami, Desperate Housewives, True Blood. That was super popular. The movie Jarhead with Jake Gyllenhaal. And in her own company, Give and Take Productions, she's directed The Night Visitor 2, Heather's Story, Psychophonia, and Transfer. So she's either in front of the camera, the director's chair, everything. But she also wrote this book. And it's called Secret Life of a Hollywood Sex and Love Addict. And we got to find out all about this. Breanne Davis, welcome so much to Madam Perry Salon.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I sound much cooler than I am, I promise.
No, don't say that. By the way, I hope you're comfortable. I didn't know if I told you this before, but when I began the podcast, one of the first guests went back and told everyone, I've been to Madam Perry's salon, and it looks like the inside of Jeannie's bottle.
Oh, so, no, I didn't know that. That's so fascinating.
Yes, it's my salon inside. That's why you see so many pillows around you to sit on, like I Dream of Jeannie. So you got it. So I hope you're comfy.
I am. I'm comfy.
Good. All right. So congratulations on your new book. And you've got a podcast.
Thank you.
Secret Life. You're welcome. And I believe that the podcast, this was something that you really hadn't planned to do. But it came about after the book was written?
Yeah, that's the thing. I never wanted to write a book. I never wanted to have a podcast. I'm a working actress. I've just been making a living the last 20 years as a working actress. And it's like all of a sudden, you know, these things opened up for me to step into and do and share my experience, strength, and hope and recovery. And yeah, I was writing the book. And when I was editing it, the Secret Life podcast just came out of the blue. It's like my whole thing is tell me your secrets and I'll tell you mine. So every show I try to tell a secret of mine while my guests reveal their secret from past or present.
I love it. That's right up my alley.
Oh, you'll love it.
Go ahead.
It's some really dark secrets, like secrets the first – a lot of our guests are anonymous, so 80% of the people that come on, I change their names. But it's – you know, we have somebody come on, the first woman that was anonymous was a woman that shot herself in the chest with a shotgun because she couldn't reach perfectionism. And she walks me through what that felt like and how she got on the other side of it. And, you know, it's really, really dark secrets, you know, addiction – coming out stories, sexually assaulted, those kind of secrets. But then we have really funny light secrets, like stealing food from Jeff Bezos at Whole Foods and like lying on your resume and being, you know, so there's a combination of both. I try to make it light and dark, but yeah, I love doing it. We've released our 71st episode and then we have about 73 episodes still in the can. So we have enough for another year and a half.
Okay, so I've subscribed and I've got plenty to listen to on the road. That's what you're saying? It doesn't matter where I drive.
Yeah, you have lots. And it's no matter. It's every kind of secret. It's every kind of walk of life, age range, ethnicity, everything. I'm really, really proud of the podcast. And it brings a lot of hope, and that's what I want to do, and that you're not alone.
Now, Secret Life of a Hollywood Sex and Love Addict, it is fiction, but it's based on a lot of things in your life. Is that right?
Yes. Well, I had to make it fiction, first of all, so I wouldn't get sued, right? Oh. Like, I have to...
My book's fiction, but loosely, too.
So I made it Aroma Clef fiction, where it's, like, based on real life, but you can change the names, the locations, the time frame. And so it really gave me a chance to, like, put my story in, but put other people's story in. And from my over, almost 12 years of recovery in sex and love addiction, so I really just got to put it all out there. And I get to say, you don't know which story is mine, and you don't know which one's fake. So it's, like, a fun game for people to try to guess, who the characters are.
So how would you define, and I have to say, with Jennifer's first book, when I was out working that, and I remember it was a hard thing for people to grasp that the book was about a woman who had sex addiction. And I remember being I was in L.A. in a cab on the way to her book launch, and the cab driver, well, what are you doing here? Well, what's this book about? And I told him, he goes, well, that shouldn't be bad for women. I mean, they can make money.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. I mean, yes, there's so much stigma, and also, like, people say the most inappropriate things when you say you're a sex and love addict. And what I like to say is, it's not hot to use people to fill you. It's not attractive to use people as a drug, and that's what we do. We use sex and love and attention and validation as we snort them. We drink people, like, give me more attention, validation. And I just feel like it's such a misunderstood disease. There's so many people I know that die from this disease. Usually if you remove a chemical addiction, there's a sex and love addict underneath. So I just, when people don't understand it, I almost want to laugh at them, because majority of our society suffer from this addiction of fantasy, romance, getting in relationships, trying to find your soulmate, trying to get validation, attention, likes on Instagram, the porn addiction that's coming with sex and love addiction, so it's just this really dark, dangerous disease that people like to not understand, because I think it hits too close to home. Honestly, I think it hits too close to home.
A lot of people don't even think it's real. They don't even think sex addiction is real.
Yeah, but I'm like, sex and love give off the same chemicals that cocaine does. And that's the first thing as, like, your sexuality, getting love from your parents, all that stuff is the first connections you get on this world. And it's like, how can you think you can get addicted to a drug, but you can't get addicted to a sex? Sex is like the best high and release. Falling in love is like the best feeling in the world. So it's like, it boggles my mind. I think because our society makes it okay, every song, every movie is about fantasy, falling in love, having sex, using your sexuality as currency, even in marriages and relationships. It's like our society likes to say it's okay, so that's why I think a lot of people don't understand it.
Breanne, I heard you in an interview, you described an interview actually. What is a sex and love addict? If you could describe that and how it compares. You started, I think you've said some of it already, but how that compares to any other kind of addict, and how do you know? How do you know when you are an addict?
Okay, so the easiest way, I like to break it down into two sections. So a sex addiction, that side of this addiction, it's where you use your sexuality as currency, where you go from relationship to relationship, where you're addicted to porn, where you're addicted to masturbation, where you're swiping left and right, having one-night stands, you're detached from your sexuality and you're getting off on it. So you're not connected. You're fear of intimacy. So then you look at the love addiction side, that's going back to toxic relationships, going from bad relationship to bad relationship, trying to get that unavailable person to want you, going into fantasy, intriguing, flirting everywhere you go, you know, getting on social media, trying to get likes and attention and validation. And then the other side of it is sexual anorexia, which usually every sex and love addict is an anorexic. So you swing to the other side and shut down sexually and stop having sex because you can't regulate it. So we're usually all a combination of it all together, but really underneath it is the fear of intimacy, the fear of being loved, the fear of abandonment, and being seen, and worthiness. It's about not having any self-love, that you reach outside for yourself to give you that validation and to give you that attention. So I really see, and a lot of people in the addict community and recovery community see, that it's the last house. You know how they say A is the last house on the block? Well, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous is like the shack in the back where, like, no one wants to go. It's like the worst of the worst. I mean, we had
a very shameful addiction.
It is so much stigma, especially as a woman. You know, women usually identify as love addicts. They're afraid to say the sex part, and men are usually like sex addicts, but they have the love addiction part, and it's like, what we do and who we use to not feel our feelings, because we don't have the tools to feel our feelings. And our society also amplifies, don't have a feeling, do something else, go shopping, eat something, have sex, find a partner, get online, look at your phone. Like, it's so, it's like, yeah, it's usually under every addiction, there's a sex and love addict. They call it the PhD of all the addictions. A lot of information, I know. I could keep talking forever. I can't help it. I'll just keep going.
And, you know, that's the thing. And that's something else I want to get to. You talking about it, because, first of all, I wanted to say how you came to write the book, what it was your husband, Mark, said that got you into a situation to write a book, another thing that you hadn't planned to do or wanted to do, like podcasting. And then from there, how you came to, because your podcast, like I said, you help a lot of people, and that's very generous.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I do it for other people. You know, it's a way for me to be of service after all these years of recovery. I want to give back. So, yeah, I never wanted to write the book. My husband, Mark, who I've been with for 17 years, I've been in recovery for 12 years. So I, you know, went through the worst of the worst with this man. And that's what I like to say. Like, this program, this work doesn't find you the perfect partner. It finds you yourself. So I found myself in the I'm my own soulmate. No one can ever be my soulmate. I live and die with myself. So when I was doing this work, I started creating a show with my friend Jana Kramer, that was married to a sex addict, and she's a love addict. And we were pitching the show around town, and what was happening was a lot of people wanted to change the narrative of it and make it something it wasn't. And my husband could feel my frustration with the creating process. And he said, hey, there's this writing course, this 90-day writing course. I think you should take it. And I looked at him like he was insane. I was on shooting Lucifer. I have a son. I'm like pitching the show. I'm like, are you insane? I'm dyslexic and I have ADHD. I'm like, I'm not a writer. I'm an actress. What, leave me alone. Like, he just kept bothering me. I was like, dude, go away. And by the sixth time, he looked me dead in my eyes and he said, listen, it's 90 days. It's not that much money. No one has to know. You take one or two classes, and if you hate it, like, we'll forget about it. And so I finally succeeded and said, okay, fine, I'll do it. And I wrote the first draft, A Secret Life of a Hollywood Sex and Love Addict, in the first 45 days. It was like something bigger than me. Yeah, 45 days, the first draft. I mean, I didn't say it's a good draft. I didn't say it was a good one. Like, it probably was
draft has to do is happen. As long as you do it, that's 99% there. Yeah.
So I wrote it. It was like, thank you. It was like, my higher power, universe, God, whatever you want to say it, was just coming through. And it was just, it just almost wrote itself. And yeah, I'm really grateful my husband pushed me. And I asked him the other day, I said, what made you do that? Like, what made you, because I've never talked about writing. And he said, I don't know. I think it was something bigger than me too. Like, he didn't even know why he kept mentioning it to me. So it was such a beautiful moment to do something I never thought I could do, help other people and bring awareness to this deadly disease that's so hidden and shameful.
I haven't read your book, but it does sound like you did it with humor in some way, or.
Oh, yeah. It's so humorous.
Tried to make
it.
Yeah.
Well, you know all the sex and love addict sex addiction books. I mean, they're very dark and,
very dark. Yeah.
Yeah. Very dark,
Do you find a lot of people have reached out to you privately or because I definitely had a lot of, my book really stemmed from what a little bit more in how your childhood, like a lot of sex addicts have been sexually assaulted as children or.
Yeah. Trauma.
Experienced some serious trauma of some kind and sort of disassociate their bodies from their emotions. So I did have a lot of people.
Oh no, there's a lot of that.
And delayed, yeah. And people don't understand that women can be sex addicts and that it isn't, it's just completely different from what men imagine a woman being a sex addict looks like.
Oh yeah, it's completely different. That's a fantasy usually, and that's not what reality
is. It's just
as deadly, just as dangerous, putting yourself in situations, using your body when you are not even attached to it, floating out of yourself and watching what you're doing and being like, there's no way you can stop it. But yeah, a lot of books I've read over the years are very clinical, educational, and so really dark. So what I wanted to do was write it in a way like a TV show or a movie where you could watch the scenes play and it's a look back at the first year of Roxanne's, recovery when she finds her bottom, when she finds out she is a sex and love addict and how she digged her way out of it. And it's a lot of,
looking back. What's her like rock
bottom? Oh, you have to read it. Well, here's the thing.
My book actually goes through rehab. Yeah. My book takes place in rehab. Actually half of it is the childhood.
Yeah,
it goes back and forth in time.
Goes through a year, but she goes back through these 10 rules. So it starts with her bottom. She's confronted by two guys she's seen and sleeping with, and they confront her in a driveway, and she's talking to us, and you can hear her self-deprecating voice. And then it goes through like how that came about when she went to her therapist, when she went to her first sex and love addict meeting, going through withdrawal, looking back at the why she is the way she is, going through the therapy process, looking at all the childhood trauma. Then it goes into like looking at character defects, the main five character defects, the compare and despair. There's a lot of funny stories and self-deprecation, but I wanted to make it so anybody that could read it could look at it and go, I've done that. I've thought that. I've said that. I put myself in situations. So it's not just my story, it's other people's stories from the 12 years I've had recovery. So,
there's not a lot of SAA, like women's only meetings out there. There's really not that many. Because I had to do a lot of research.
Yeah, I've gone to a lot of SAA
meetings. Yeah. But it's very enlightening to hear everyone's stories and, just learn about addiction and recovery and, I just find it all fascinating because so many people have to deal with it. So many people have been either directly or indirectly affected by addiction. So it's kind of a good subject.
Yeah, just today I had a woman reach out and I posted it on Instagram. I asked first, obviously, and I cut out her identity, but she said, I was married to a sex addict and I didn't want to read your book. I thought it was going to be triggering, but she said, holy crap, this ride is so much fun, but it also like hit the spots of where I'm a love addict and I played a part in it. And that's really why I wanted to help the people that are with sex and love addicts, with a sex addict, with a love addict, and that are themselves or have family members. I mean, my mom read it the day it came out and she said, she called me and she's like, I just want you to know for the first time in a decade, I finally understand your disease completely. And then she said, I'm going to cry. She said, and just so you know, I've done some of the things you've done too. And it was just such a beautiful moment that I could teach my mom. And she said, it was such a glorious moment. So every other email and DM, I'm like, it's just so meaningful when someone reaches out and says, oh my God, thank you for giving me the answer. I don't know why I'm so bad in relationships. I don't know why I use my sexuality to manipulate, control, and have power over people. So yeah, it's been such a beautiful process.
That's been the most rewarding part for me, is helping, is seeing how it's helped people and related, to help them relate to their issues and situations.
Well, yeah, that's true. Because, you know, one of the people, I think I told you this before, Jennifer, once someone told me that when they read Address the Color of the Sky, it helped them understand their sister a lot more and why she behaved the way she did and did certain things. Well, one thing I want to ask you, Brianna, is this, what you're talking about with the way you wrote the book, was that you've got an interesting way of, you've taken the subject, serious subject, true story, most of it, you know, fictionalized so that to avoid problems with, like, you know, I guess NDAs, lawsuits, that kind of thing. And
yeah,
I know, it's like
no one wants that. That's for sure.
I know.
Well,
every time
you're dealing with Hollywood and like people like Cool Girl, Superstar, Suits, like all these. I gave everybody nicknames, tell who they are, but all those people could sue me for a lot of money. So
I
had to change, like Glam Girl. All those names had to be changed, and I didn't want to just pick like Steve. And Barbara, you know, like, so I got creative with the names.
You got very creative. They're very clever names. You know, somebody's like ATL and
well,
NYC.
What if I picked,
and...
like, Kate? What if I picked Kate and then people would think it's, like, Kate Hudson or Kate, you know, like, I couldn't pick normal names because it is in Hollywood.
Well, a good sex addict doesn't usually use their anybody by their real name. They just have nicknames for
everybody.
There
you go.
So that kind of goes in well with the addiction.
Exactly. Sometimes you don't even know their name. So you're just like, oh,
right,
that guy.
Exactly.
Guy in the brown shirt. Guy, trucker.
Yeah,
like whatever.
Yeah.
You make up your own name.
Exactly.
By the way, this is a good time to say, if you're listening to the live show tonight on October 19th and you want to have a question for Brianna Davis, you can call 646-716-9922. It's a toll-free call in the continental U.S. Blog Talk Radio assures me, or for people, and I have a lot of listeners that, well, they listen live, but they're at a place where they can't make a phone call, like a job or something, and they usually send a message through Facebook, either through Madame Perry Salon or Jennifer Maudette Perry, and I'll be happy to share that with Brianna. Although this is one of those kind of shows where nobody calls, and then at the end I get this flood of messages. Why didn't you ask this? What about that? We're like, well, why didn't you call? I was too busy listening. So, you know, they'll let you know. But one of the things is you have a way, and I was going to say, did you mean to? But I'm sure you did. You know what you're doing in the book. You knew how to take us into the serious stuff where we're like, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can keep on. I feel for her. I don't know. And then you would kind of, it's like you would break the fourth wall. Roxanne would look at you like you're her friend that just got in the car with her, and she's telling you about it. And she was back in a little
joke.
Yeah,
no, I wrote it purposely like that. I wrote it where it's a friend sitting across from you and she's taking you through the journey of why she is the way she is. And she knows she's a bad person sometimes. Like Roxanne will sit there and I know this is horrible and I know you probably think horribly of me, but here it is. You know, this is what happened. This is what I did. This is what was done for me. This is where I'm broken. This is where I hope I'm not alone, you know? So I really wanted to make it like a conversation piece. It was most important to me. And I wrote it how I talked. My editor and stuff was, you know, they're like, you're breaking all the rules with writing. And I'm like, well, I'm not a writer, so I can break any rule I want, right? So I just really went with it. And it was such a beautiful thing. I gave it to an old timer because as Jennifer knows in SAA and SLAA, it's very secretive. People don't talk about being in the program. Mm-hmm. So when I gave it to another old timer in my program, and there's not many people that have a lot of time, he said, he was like, oh, it's like a long 45-minute share or conversation you have with a friend. And I said, exactly. So I did want to make it, you know, very light, but also goes to really, really dark places. It goes really, really dark. And, And I try to pull back after that so you don't get buried in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you feel like you're the friend.
Definitely, yeah, interesting.
Well, you're on the way to the first meeting.
The same. I always say the same thing, that I write exactly how I talk, and it's very easy, and it's a difficult subject, but it's not – It's easy to read, and it's not complex. It's relatable because I just write the way I talk. But I am a writer, and you have to stop saying you're not a writer because you are a writer because you have a book.
Well,
you published a book. So now you're a writer.
I know my husband is okay. Give me this. I literally had to do the audiobook. I had to practice because I am dyslexic and I'm an actor, so I practice my dialogue, and I was practicing the book, and I looked at him, I'm like, oh, this is really, really good. And he looked at me, he's like, yeah, you wrote it. And I was like, I really just don't feel like I wrote it. But I have written book two, you know, Roxanne goes on a sober dating journey in Hollywood, and there's a book three and a book four. So I promise you I will start saying I'm a writer. How's that? Like, I'll say it now.
Yeah. Fake it till you make it. You know the lingo.
Yeah, right? Totally. Assume the position. I'm a writer. Okay, I'm a writer.
Yeah, exactly. You got it.
It's a good thing you're famous enough to not need a business card, because you got a lot of things to put on there. Actress, author, producer. She's a writer. She's a podcaster. She's a Wonder Woman. I love the fact, again, that, you know, you're right. There's shame, there's stigma and so forth, but I don't know. How do you get past that part? For people listening, want to know, how do you get past that part? Because we all have things that we feel uncomfortable about or ashamed about. God knows I do. And try to think about how to go on out and hold up my head and just keep on going and not worry about other people.
Well, that took a long time. I've been in recovery a really long time. So if someone is starting a program or getting help in therapy, I don't advise people to go out and say, hey, this is what I'm going through, this is me, because you have to keep it close at the beginning. You have to heal yourself mm-hmm. from the inside out. So when I hit a decade of recovery, when that gold 10-year chip was in my hand, something spoke to me, you need to think bigger. This is not about your community. Yes, it's a big community. Yes, I speak all over the world. I go to recovery houses. I talk. But it was this thing like you need to help more. And I didn't know what that was going to look like. And what that was is I wrote an article for HuffPost coming out and before the book came out. And what happened was the day it came out, I kid you not, I was like, oh my God, at 9 a.m. going, oh my God, I just ruined my life. My career is over. No one's going to hire me. They think I'm a sex fiend. Crazy. Uh-oh. Yeah. Like I had this like, oh my God, I ruined my life. But what really happened is nothing happened. Nobody cared. It was like, talk about humility, right? Like, it's like my God was like,
it's
humble
funny.
Yourself,
it seems
lady.
Like when guys come out, it's like a big deal. When like different men have come, actors especially, and famous men have come forward that they're sex addicts, they're a really big deal.
Yeah, but nothing.
I don't think
like
people
cricket.
Think women can be sex addicts. Yeah.
Probably most of them don't, but it was crickets. Nothing happened. And it was such a humbling experience for me. But here's what happened. The last bit of stigma and shame I was holding just evaporated that I didn't even know I had. So it was like me speaking out and saying, you're not alone. Then it got 2 million hits in the first week and a half. And people started reaching out all over the world, in Ireland and London and Dubai and all these places. I got all these messages, all these emails saying, oh, my God, I do that in relationships. I've done those 40 questions. I go back to toxic relationships. I use my sexuality as power and manipulation. I've had two boyfriends at one time. Like, so it was like, you know, it was such a beautiful experience. So I always think to get out of your own shame and stigma, help somebody else. Help somebody else. Mm-hmm. That always gets me out.
I think a lot of women are codependent too, and they don't even know how
Toxic
and serious that can be and what an addiction that is.
Oh, codependency is like you might as well – that's like an alcoholic drinking. Codependency goes with the love addiction where you're like mm-hmm. constantly trying to – you take on other people's emotions. You make them all about you and that they give you your identity. It's like – but that usually stems to your family members. If you're doing it in relationships, mm-hmm. it's usually because you have family members that are codependent and enmeshing. So definitely love mm-hmm. addiction and the sex addiction, all those go together. It's about relationships, having unhealthy relationships.
Yeah, wow. For sure. And I think a lot of it goes back to the childhood.
Always. I mean, it always goes back. Yeah. If you don't have a stable background, if you've been sexualized yeah. too young, if you put yourself in compromising positions, if you didn't have parents that mirrored healthy relationships for you, if you came from a broken home, all of that affects mm-hmm. your development and how you have healthy relationships.
Yeah. That's the truth. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just had a message come in from Sandy, and she's in mm-hmm. Australia, and she says, I am loving this. Thank you so much. You're speaking to my soul. So thank you, Sandy, for sharing
Aww.
That with us.
Aww.
Thank you, Sandy. And if you want any more information, you can always DM me at the Breanne Davis, or go online, look up the 40 questionnaire. It's 40 SLAA questionnaire, and you can answer these really simple questions and see if maybe this is something that can help you and help you have a healthy relationship outside and a healthy relationship with yourself. And thank you so much. That's so sweet.
And by the way, I will be sharing on, because you know, after tonight, this show mm-hmm. is available for download on places I don't even know, but I know for sure it's on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple, iTunes,
so
Podbean. Well, it's true. I'm always finding it somewhere else, and I'm thinking, okay, they're making money off ads, like things I've never heard of. Yeah, it's different when you're leaving the doctor's office, and they go, oh, by the way, Madam Perry, see you in a year. And I go, how did you know? You're on Podbean. That's what I listen to. So. Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah,
I love it.
So, but I will be sharing on all of my social media, whether it's for Madam Perry Salon or for Jennifer Perry for my personal social media, I will share all the links to be able to check out Breanne's book and her Instagram, all of her social media. And again, to everybody, as well as Jennifer Irwin's too. I'll be sharing all of it on all
Yay.
My social media and LinkedIn and everything. Yay! Because why not, ladies? Let's just celebrate each other.
Exactly.
Yeah,
support and celebrate.
So if you're, because a lot of people listen, they tell me they listen when they're driving or when they're jogging, so you can't write it down then. So mm-hmm. I always share it everywhere. So, Breanne, what do you have? You say you've got another book in the works already. Where
yes.
is that going to take? Is it going to follow Roxanne again?
Yes, it's a 4-book series. It follows Roxanne after, you know, she gets her first year of sobriety and sex and love addiction. And she has to start sober dating, healthy dating. So she goes in back into the dating world trying to work it out. And it is a hot mess. And you get to read all about it, hopefully, by the end of next year. But, yeah, I'm in rewrites right now. So I'm doing that and then just, you know, supporting Secret Life podcast and all that. Yeah.
So are you pulling
you...
the second book from your real life experiences or partially in your – so you, 'cause you didn't really sober date because you were already married when you got recovered – when you – went to recovery.
Well, I was not
married.
Did you go
to rehab or you just did meetings?
No, I didn't go to rehab. I went to 8 years of intense therapy twice a week and body work, going to 5 meetings a week in SLAA, working the steps. It took me 9 years to do my 12 steps. My 4th step took about 2.5 years. So I didn't do the rehab route. I did the intense work, but I wasn't married to my husband. He was my boyfriend and have to redate. So it's like, even though I had a partner, I still had to learn how to date, but I also took from other people's experience in the dating. I've taken a lot of people through dating history, and I just wanted to bring this energetic roller coaster ride of how to date in Hollywood, which is a hot mess in itself, and, you know, and follow this working actress and how she navigates. And it also, every book I have 10 rules. So it's 10 rules to help someone. They can take the rules and put them in their life. So there's another 10 rules how to sober date in a healthy way where you have boundaries and self-love and self-esteem.
There are two themes in the book that what it's like. Yeah, it's like you take it's like where your girlfriend hanging with you. You're letting us see things. One is where these two. I don't know why but they stayed with me. One of them is, please tell me it's not true that you ripped off that you ripped a $5,000 Christian Dior dress and. That you had to pin it back like, what's her name, Hurley? Oh, what's her name? Hurley, she was huge. Anyway, she's the actress that had the dress with the safety pins in it. I think it was, I don't know if it was Dior or somebody, or it might have been.
Elizabeth Hurley,
that's what it is. Yeah, yeah.
Her safety pin dress.
Yeah. That was infamous.
That dress did not get safety pin back, no. But that's funny. I love it.
Okay. And
you're talking about with CEO, right? The CEO scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chapter 3. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
that was the funny scene to write.
I worked for Dior for a while. You're thinking LVMH. Oh my God!
I don't think I could do.
Really?
I don't
really?
Think I could recite what chapter something happened in my book. That's impressive. That's really impressive.
Thanks.
And the other one was when going back to Roxanne goes back to her therapist's office after she hasn't been there for a while, and she goes, you know, I got to have your next appointment. I need you. And she's in the waiting area where there's another therapist, too. And the other person waiting for their therapist is also an actress. And so you're kind of like looking but not looking, not wanting to really recognize.
Mm-hmm.
But you see in her bag a script.
Mm-hmm.
That should be your script. So you're trying to like catch the name of the character before while you're texting your agent. Why am I not up for this script? That's such a funny
scene. That happens all the time, though. That happens all the time in Hollywood. So I put a lot of moments in there where that does occur all the time. Like a friend that's an actress, you'll be like, "What role is that? Wait, I didn't get called in for that. Oh, I need to call my agent right now. Why am I not called in for that part?" Like, so that I put a lot of things in that working actors, you know, we all think of Hollywood as A-list celebrities on the red carpet. And I really wanted to show what it's like to be a working actress, you know, that you're not on the billboard, but you're making a living, but it's a struggle and the ups and downs of it and how it can be brutal and how you're put in situations where you compromise your morals and values sometimes. So I just really wanted to shed a light on Hollywood as well.
Oh my gosh, because you're looking, it's like somebody trying to look at another desk during a test in high school or college.
Totally.
So you're trying to peek but not peek, but yet not get each other's attention or acknowledge it, even though you both know each other's there. And
yeah,
that's funny.
That's Brittany Ashley, right? Brittany Ashley, doppelganger is what I like to
say. Yeah.
That's like doppelganger. Because you go into a room, like if I go into a room to audition and I look around, it's like five girls that look exactly like me. And so it's like you run into the same people and you all look
alike.
The
same with modeling. Like, yeah, it's the same with modeling.
Totally. You're like, oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Like I'm not unique or special. I'm just like a number. So it just, I had fun writing about Brittany Ashley in that scene too.
That was good. It reminds me of one of the Marilyn Monroe scenes.
It's probably fun to be able to write about. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Jen.
Oh, I was just saying it's probably fun to be able to sort of like write about Hollywood without any repercussions, because you could just make fun or like talk about things that happen all the time that a lay person wouldn't know about, but not really have any, like nobody's going to call you out on it because it's just a fiction novel. So that must have been kind of fun.
Oh, it was so fun because when I first wrote it, that first draft in 45 days, that was just pure memoir. So when I did the rewrites, I really got to like just go for it and say whatever. And I can always say, well, you don't know if that's true or fake. So like chapter 8, the cool girl and superstar scene with Roxanne, that was like ultimate fun. I loved writing the scene at the Hotel Bel Air and how hilarious it got. And just like writing about sets, like working with certain directors. And I'm doing that now. There's a lot of like comedians and stuff in the second book and on set romance that happened. So yeah, it was a really fun to write it and have no consequences. It's like, sorry, chicken, you know.
And I bet on-set romances happen a lot.
Oh yeah, they're called showmances.
So much time
it's like
yeah.
Yeah, showmances, it's like a cornucopia of acting out. I mean, there's so many sex and love addicts in Hollywood. It's like, who's the director hooking up with? Who's the co-star hooking up with? Who? And then when you're done with that show or movie, then everybody like breaks up and goes to the next set. So it's like very known in the business.
And there's also the sad fact of like power plays and women having to feel obligated to have sex to see if they're going to get further in their career or.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's in there. I never had a casting couch experience, but I did put a couple of them in there. So, cause it lent to Roxanne's story, but yeah, that is very well known in the business as well.
Yeah.
Wow. I think around 95, 98, there was a movie in Atlanta, that I was going to, I was auditioning for just a small part, and then they asked me, they said, we'd like for you to be just the body double for Judith Light. And would I come in?
Oh, really?
Yeah, and undress for the guy, what's his name, Charles, redheaded guy that used to be on this cop show, Hill Street Blues. Well, come on in and just take, you know, just, and she wouldn't say take off your clothes. She would just gesture, you know, like pull down your pants, take off your top. And I said, but if I don't want to do that, do I still have a place in this? Oh yeah, no problem. So I sat and waited and waited, and then I realized everybody had left the building, had left me in there.
Geez.
So this is strange. But when you're a director, do you ever feel? I'm sure you, as a director, you see things like this happening. Do you ever feel like you just in your heart just want to pull a young woman aside and say, "Honey, you don't have to do this"? If they're being pressured by someone.
100%. I mean, yeah, even on, you know, on my show Six that I was on for 2 years and, you know, other shows I've been on, I've seen people not wanting to do stuff. And it's like, you do want to pull, especially younger, newer, greener actors and be like, hey, you don't have to put up with that. That's not, you cannot compromise yourself in this business. It's a longevity business. It's not quick. You know, there's rarely anybody that hits stardom overnight. So it's like the last thing you want to do is compromise your soul for a job because that job is never going to complete you. It's never going to give you your self-worth because Hollywood is ups and downs constantly. One day you're up, next day you're down. And it's like you cannot put your self-worth on a job. So, yeah, I've told people and, you know, the two movies I've directed, I don't believe in like over-sexualized scenes. So, yeah, that's important to me. I mean, one of the movies has a sex scene and the actress wanted to get naked. I said it's not necessary, but she wanted to. So I was like, okay, you do you. But, yeah, I don't think nudity is important to make a movie a great movie.
Now, is your book very graphic or is it explicit sex scenes?
Yeah, it's very graphic. It's very graphic.
It's
very foul-mouthed. It pretty much says the worst of the worst. It gets really dirty. And you know, and that's why in interviews I never talk about the sexual stuff. You can read about it and see, but I really try to put the subtext of what thinking while the graphic things are happening. So, you know, there's moments where she says she's not going to do something and then she ends up doing it. And I really wanted to get the reader to go through the mind of an addict of why they make the choices they do when they say they don't want to do something or they're done doing
it. Yeah,
something.
The desperate.
Or they're done
the
with that relationship.
That they're in.
Yeah. Yeah. So it really goes there. I mean, I've had moments where people were diaper shopping while listening to it on audiobook and said they died, were like dying in the, you know, the aisle thinking people could hear what was on their headphones because I was like, you know, talking so dirty and graphic. Oh, but can you imagine it was like doing the audiobook was like the most torturing experience ever. It was like reading your journal and all the horrible things to some group of men listening on a sound booth. It was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Now, have most of your reviews been written by women or have some men written them too?
No, I have a lot of men readers. I'm surprised because it is more written like a chick lit kind of book, but I have a lot of male readers. I have a lot of males reach out to me. I have a lot of women as well, but I'm surprised. I would say it's 50-50, but it's like chick lit self-help memoir. And yeah, I'm really grateful for the men that say, oh my God, I've put myself in those situations. You know, I've been addicted to my ex. I can't let go of my old wife or whatever. Yeah. So.
Well, it's nice for, I mean, I have the same thing. I have a lot of, I'd say over 50% have been men, which wasn't my target audience, but I think nice for men to get in the head of a woman, especially in a situation in which they're an addict or desperate or doing things out of for reasons that aren't necessarily because they're desiring the guy. It's mostly just for this this insatiable attention, need for attention and sex and love and that whole sort of thing.
No, I think either of our books could help both gender, you know, I love that it goes where, you know, there's a lot of guys in my book that are love addicts that are also sex addicts in the book, you know, for exes, because usually two addicts will, you know, act out together. So I love that.
And by the way, did you draw the cover or did you?
No. I did. That was my cover idea, but I had a graphic artist. We had a graphic artist put the cover together. Thank you.
Elena has two covers. I noticed you have two covers on Amazon.
Yes, we have two covers because I always say we, because I don't know why I say that, because a bunch of people come together and create the book cover, everything. So I always say we, like it's not mine, but sometimes to have it at certain outlets, Barnes & Noble and stuff, it was a little too graphic. So we had to give an alternative cover.
Oh, I see.
So that, because it was a little, that they said that she was nude and stuff. And I'm like, she's not nude. Her things are covered, but she's raw on the red carpet and bearing her, you know, like getting raw and naked and vulnerable. So we had to do two covers, but I love the other cover as well. So I'm fine now with it. But I was very upset when they made me do a second cover. I was like, no. But yeah.
All right. Well, Breanne Davis, wish you the most success with this book. I know it's already success, and it's going to be even bigger. And I'm just so grateful for people like you and Jennifer Irwin, who, you know, you share your stories, no matter how painful it must be, to help other people. Because when I see you on your, listen to your podcast and the people that you help and the reviews that, you know, you both get for your books, I am just so grateful that there are women like you in the world, in my world. And because we can't do it, you know, there are things that just can't do by yourself. And, you know, it's one thing to judge, but it's a much better thing to step back and say, I probably have no idea what they're going through, but let's see what we can do to help. And thank you
both. That's the whole reason. Let's lift each other up.
Yeah, thank you,
Jennifer. Like, we are not alone. Thank you for having me.
Well, I am delighted that you accepted the invitation to the Genie Bottle. I hope that you will return. You got three more books. I hope you'll come back. Okay.
Yes.
I will. I'll come back.
It was really fun hearing you talk, and you're inspiring, and obviously you've done a lot of personal work, which is super nice to hear, and I think will be very inspiring for a lot of people. We can always do better and be better.
Yeah.
Thank you, and I look forward to reading your new book, too.
Oh, thank you. I'm about to buy yours on Amazon. I sent you a little message on Instagram, by the way.
Oh, perfect. All right. Yeah, I'll reply back.
I love this. It's like a pajama party in the genie bottle. I'm loving this.
In a genie bottle.
Am I the luckiest woman
totally.
In the world or what? To have the guest I have in the audience. You make me feel so grateful for this, and I'm so appreciative. So everyone, I will be sharing how to get Breanne Davis's book, Secret Life of a Hollywood Sex and Love Addict. I guess you have your choice of covers. They're both good, but this was really cute. And also Jennifer Irwin, The Moon, follow-up to Address the Color of the Sky. So I will have all the information to get all of those wherever you want. And remember what I always say is be good to yourself. Be good to each other, because I think you're all wonderful. Thank you, Breanne. Thank you, Jennifer. And
goodbye, Luda.
Everybody's got to swim. Good night, ladies.